Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, the pulse of conservative talk on the internet, the podcast heard around the world. I want to welcome all my listeners from coast to coast and all places in between, around the globe, across the sea, across the ocean even, to the show where we don't tolerate calls. We don't know. What don't we tolerate? We don't tolerate sponsors is what it is. Well, we don't tolerate calls either. We don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. It's a one-hour monologue, something that very few professional talk show hosts can pull off. And here, I do it in my spare time. So there. All right. And it is the Christmas season. I want to wish a Merry Christmas to everyone out there, including my extremely attractive audio engineer. I have a gift for you, dear. So here in my stack of news, I have several stories on deviants and perverts who are destroying the culture and just setting a bad example generally. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take those stories out of the stack, and they will not be covered on the Weekly Worldview this week. That's my gift to you, my extremely attractive audio engineer, who has concerns about me because I obsess over these things, apparently, and I mention them far too much. In light of that, my dear, will I be able to address the Piers Morgan controversy? It's borderline, but she'll let that one slide as long as we don't make any references to Piers' personal life. No, I'm sure Piers is a perfectly normal person, despite the fact that he's a left-wing maniac. But we'll get to that later. Let's start not in Great Britain, although Piers isn't in Great Britain. I think he lives in New York now, and it shows. Let's start in Germany, where the headline leapt off the website at me. God's gender divides the German government. God's gender, that is. So listen to this. In Germany, in the government there, they have a position called family minister. What is that? A family minister? That seems like an oxymoron to me. A minister of families in the socialist government of Germany? But there she is, Christina Schroeder or Schroeder. I'm never sure how to pronounce that. Let's go with Schroeder. Christina Schroeder is the family minister in Angela Merkel's German government. She's made some controversial statements. She was asked in an interview with the German weekly newspaper Die Zeit how she explained to her young daughter the use of the masculine term for God. If you're not familiar with German, let me help you along. Das is neutral, and der is masculine. So when they're talking about God, people generally use the masculine der. I should have looked up God in German before I started the show. That way I'd have been able to explain it more clearly. But you get the picture. Anyway, so Family Minister Christina Schroeder, she's asked about this. How does she explain that to her young daughter? She says, the article is not important. It's fine to use das instead of der when referring to Gott, she said. So she says it's fine to refer to God in the neutral gender, basically. And that's what she explained to her young daughter. Well, this remark has sparked, as you can well imagine, some controversy among the half a dozen Christians left in Germany. She was denounced by members of her own Christian Democratic Union, as well as the Christian Social Union Party there in Germany. Christine Hedderthauer, the Bavarian social minister, said, "This intellectualized nonsense leaves me speechless," unquote, she said of Christina Schroeder's inaccurate use of the masculine versus feminine versus neuter. Is it a pronoun? I'm not sure. Maybe it's an adverb or an adjective. But basically referring to God in the neuter rather than in the masculine. But and Angela Merkel was asked about it, and on this particular issue, Angela chose not to speak up, taking the lead of Hillary Clinton in the Benghazi affair. Merkel decided to just work from home on this particular issue. But last Friday, Merkel's spokesman, Stefan, said this. He said, quote, "If you believe in God, the article is not important. If you speak to God in a different way, the prayers are still heard." Unquote. That's a little German lingo there. So he says it doesn't matter. This is Angela Merkel's spokesman, says it doesn't matter. As long as you pray, God will hear your prayers. So let's check the scripture on that, which is something that even the Christians in Germany, they don't have access to Bibles. I don't even know if the Bible's allowed in Germany anymore, which is odd because I think it was first printed in Germany, if I'm not mistaken, with the printing press anyways. But let's go to the scripture for an opinion on Angela Merkel's spokesman Stefan's statement that if you speak to God in a different way, the prayers are still heard. Warning, warning, warning. Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare consider the possibility of quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Let's go to Matthew in the 7th chapter, where Jesus said this, "Not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven." Father, by the way, being a masculine pronoun. "Many will say to me in that day, Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?" And Jesus says, "And then I will declare to them, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of iniquity." Get out of here with that, Angela, Stefan, Christina. Is there anyone I missed? Okay. So there we have it. God is a masculine God. Jesus Christ is a man. Okay? And if you start praying to some feminized God, well, he's not going to listen to you. He's going to say, "Depart from me." Okay? So there. Just to settle that controversy over there in Europe, we appreciate the opportunity to step in and lend a helping hand to our weaker brethren there in the ew. Anyway. All right. Do we want to go on to Piers Morgan? So Piers Morgan was out of control this past week. He was so out of control that I came into the living room here at the McBurney compound to find my extremely attractive audio engineer actually tuned in to Piers Morgan. And she said, "Come here, you got to see this. You're not going to believe this." And I witnessed it myself. I think it was Tuesday night. He had on John Lott, the author of More Guns, Less Crime, where I've heard the interview with Mr. Lott. He's quite an impressive fellow. And he has documented that wherever gun bans go into effect, statistically, murder rates increase. Well, Piers would have none of that. None of that, Mr. Lott. You're facetious. You have not a relevant argument. You have no cohesive argument. You have no coherent argument. You're stupid. You're an idiot. You're a complete, unbelievably stupid idiot. After Mr. Lott was citing statistical studies, peer-reviewed, "It's facetious is what it is, Mr. Lott." And then it was Wednesday night that, did I have this right? Anyway, the next night or the night before, he had on Larry Pratt, the head of Gun Owners of America, and Piers referred to him as an idiot. "You're an idiot, sir." And the strange thing about the appearance of Mr. Lott, the author of More Guns, Less Crime, was that Piers was surrounded on the dais by a number of liberals, all advocating for gun control, sensible gun control, I might add. And he made John Lott sit in the audience, you know, like an excommunicated member of the church who has to sit outside. Piers had him sitting down in the audience, where he referred to him as a facetious idiot over and over. Anyway, folks, if Piers Morgan still has a job after New Year's in America, then we can assume that all hope is lost for the mainstream media. There's no hope. The government media complex is so secure in its liberal fanatic dogma that there is no hope. And we might have to cancel CNN here at the McBurney compound, although it's part of the basic cable package. You know, it's you just can't get rid of it. It's like a virus. It just hangs out. You can only treat the symptoms. But we'll see if Piz. And then I did see Piz was on with, who's the guitar player, the rock and roller guy from the 70s? Ted Nugent. Piers was on with Ted Nugent. And I'm surprised that Piers survived that without getting punched in the face or shot through with an arrow. I'm surprised. And unfortunately, I didn't get to see the interview with Mr. Nugent, but that would have been something to watch. All right. But just a quick update, ladies and gentlemen. Not that this is a mass shooting. I just want to let you know that out in Franktown Township in Pennsylvania at the Juanita Valley Gospel Church, two troopers were fired at by the driver of a pickup truck, and a third officer was injured in a head-on crash with the pickup. Troopers returned fire, killing the man. He had killed three people inside the Juanita Valley Gospel Church. And as we go to press tonight, we just don't know why it is this maniac shot up this church and shot at the police. Does that qualify as a mass shooting? He only shot three people, and then he shot at three other police officers. So I think that just qualifies as just your average day in America. That doesn't qualify as a mass shooting anymore. And we'll continue on with. Well, I wasn't sure whether to put this in the domestic tranquility file or to file this in the reasons to keep your kids out of the public school, of which I believe we're up to number 660. So that's the way we'll, the headline here is reason 660 not to allow your children to attend government school. Dateline Kearns, Utah, a sixth grade student brought an unloaded handgun to West Kearns Elementary School last Monday. The 11-year-old allegedly told other students that his parents had encouraged him to bring a gun to school for protection. One parent pulled her daughter out of class after hearing about the incident on Tuesday morning, and the mom said this, quote, "I don't want to have to be at work or anything like that and worry about my child possibly not coming home, especially before Christmas," said the mom, unquote. So mom's at work, and she entrusts her 7-8-year-old daughter to the government school, where now I guess firearms are necessary for protection against the maniacs out. That's just reason 660, ladies and gentlemen. I would say to this mom out in Kearns, Utah, mom, whether or not your daughter makes it home on any given day from the public school, she may not be shot and killed at the government school. The odds of that happening are probably close to similar odds of her being struck by lightning to or on the way to or from school. But your daughter is being destroyed in the public school. She is being permanently inoculated against the knowledge of the saving grace of her Heavenly Father and against a relationship with Jesus Christ. And she is being sandbagged and encouraged toward eternal damnation in the pits of hell. Irregardless of whether or not anyone at school has firearms, whether it's good guys or bad guys. Just, that's my advice to mom in Kearns, Utah. Moms anywhere. Let me see now. I want to make sure. Hold on just a second now. And now this is Utah as well. Here we go. Dateline Salt Lake City. Reason 661, keep your kids out of the government school. Dateline Salt Lake from Fox, Demand for a Utah company's bulletproof backpacks and child-sized body armor has skyrocketed in the aftermath of recent mass murders. The company's called Amendment 2, and it's been in business for a couple of years. It sells a particular brand of lightweight armor called Rhino Hide to police agencies and the military. Well, now they've begun putting these sheets of armor in children's backpacks. They did that about a year ago after the mass killings that we were talking about a year ago. Let's see here. They asked one parent if they thought their children should wear body armor to school. And this parent said, well, I'd rather have an administrator or a teacher be armed and trained to handle situations like that rather than buying the rhino hide for their child. Let's see. And then, of course, on the other side, we've got an executive director of the progressive think tank Alliance for a Better Utah. This executive director at the progressive think tank says she wants to see a more reasonable approach to gun laws. So we've got a debate that's broken out. Actually, it's a debate that's been carefully seeded in the government media complex between those who want to arm teachers and administrators or put police at the schools, and those who want better gun control laws and perhaps rhino hide and bulletproof backpacks for the children. And many of you in the audience are asking, well, who's right? Which side should I be on? Do we want armed teachers and administrators? Do we want to have more good guys with guns so that when the bad guys come, we have good guys with guns? Should we wrap our children in Kevlar? Or should we have more gun control laws? And I would posit the opinion, well, I'll do it here in just a moment, but neither one of them are correct. It's a weekly worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And as I said, the two sides of the argument between armed camps in school and gun control laws. Well, let's just continue with the litany of stories regarding gun control. You all heard, I'm certain, Wayne LaPierre over at the National Rifle Association make the statement that what we need is armed police officers in every government school. That's the National Rifle Association's solution to the problem. And Wayne said, correctly I might add, that the best thing to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. And a week before Wayne LaPierre made his comments, we had a police chief, Tim Fitch, out in St. Louis. He said in an article on CBS's website that it's time to talk about arming civilian school personnel following the massacre. Fitch said, this is the police chief, he says, the killing will not be stopped by legislation or laws. If there's somebody that's really hell-bent on doing something like this, they're not going to care what the law says. And then he called for arming school teachers and personnel. He also called for an increased focus on mental health. And that's kind of tangentially, I think, he mentioned mental health. But that's kind of what I want to focus on. I think the solution lies somewhere between legislation and mental health. And of course, when it comes to the right to keep and bear arms, I don't believe there's any need for the legislation we have, let alone more legislation. And I agree with Mr. Fitch that more gun control laws aren't going to make a bit of difference in the struggle to return America to some semblance of domestic tranquility. That we have lost that, by the way. But to Mr. LaPierre, let me say, maybe I should preface this with my theory first. Okay, I think I should, because I don't fundamentally disagree with Mr. LaPierre at the NRA that the best thing to stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun. It's pretty blatantly, obviously true on its face. But I think that as our culture has detached from God, and God's been expelled, Jesus Christ particularly, our Christian heritage has been expelled from not only our schools but the public square, I think that this detachment from our Creator causes mental illness. I think that people who live in denial of their Creator and their need for a relationship with Him and their need for saving from their sins, I think that people on the fringes, weaker-minded people, tend to go insane. And even seemingly normal people end up with significant problems and issues in their life because they have banished God from their thought processes without realizing that God is absolutely necessary for a healthy thought life, a healthy self-image, a healthy mind, a knowledge, and a regular interface with the Creator is absolutely necessary. And as we've disengaged God from our culture and our lives, we end up with more insanity and mental illness. We rely instead, I think now, on pharmaceuticals primarily. Instead of God, God's been replaced by pharmaceuticals, at least in the public schools, that's fairly obvious. I think in Hollywood, on the set of Piers Morgan, on the whole set of CNN, those people are deranged, delusional. What is in the Bible? God says that toward the end, He will send them strong delusion, and it even refers to drugs. Anyway, and this idea in the Bible of God sending them strong delusion, I don't believe God has to sit up there on His throne and whip up a batch of strong delusion and send it down to the people. It's just built into the system. It's the way He created the universe that if we detached from Him and banished Him and dishonored Him and denied His existence, that strong delusion would come down upon us. And in a sense, it's from God because that's the way He created the system. But He's not up there whipping up a pot full of it, getting ready to send it down. It's the natural consequences. So I think that, we're in a bit of a quandary because I don't believe putting guns in the public schools is the solution. And let me explain to you why. Mr. LaPierre, let me address your statement directly. You say we need good guys with guns in order to stop the bad guys with guns. But Mr. LaPierre, I believe that there is a significant shortage of good guys. Where are we going to find good guys in a society where for the better part of two generations, our people have been educated that they evolved from slime and that the entire universe rests on the principle of the survival of the fittest. The strongest survive and the weak die. How are you going to find enough good guys to protect the schools? I don't think it's possible, Mr. LaPierre, so I don't think that is a reasonable solution. Now, another solution people might posit is the idea that we need to put God in the public schools. And I think that's problematic as well, because the government schools as they exist today are, I would liken them to an old wineskin. They're already corrupt and decrepit after having had God banished from them for the better part of a century in some places. And so I don't think putting God into a pagan temple is a good idea ever. either. It, as my pastor says, it's like putting the Bible into every whorehouse to make sure that God is honored. And I think Bob says a little more diplomatically than that, but that's the basic idea. So I don't think it's a good idea to put more guns in the schools. Obviously, we can't put God into the schools because the schools are hell-bent and set against God. And so we're in a bit of a quandary, I would say, where there is no good solution. And so I say retreat. Yeah, I know, and I'm not big on retreat, but I've retreated. I have seceded from the government school system. My extremely attractive audio engineer and I have removed our children. Well, we didn't remove them. We actually never. There was no need to remove them because we never let them go. But we have decided not to turn our children over to the government school system. We've decided to take care of that ourselves here at the McBurney compound. And I think that's the best solution in the short term. If you're looking for a solid solution to the problem of violence in our schools, I would suggest that you just secede from the whole process, okay? Because it's beyond repair. There are some things that a rational-minded person can look at and say, okay, that's, you know, I'm not going to be able to go into, say, this crack house or this shooting gallery, and I'm not going to be able to reform that system. And that's what the government school complex appears to be to me. So I think if enough of us parents pull our kids out, then perhaps another system. I don't know. To me, it's pretty much beyond repair. And so I would say, I guess it's not really surrender. It's just secession. We haven't surrendered. We've just seceded and decided not to participate. And like that. So I guess that's my theory on that, for whatever it's worth. Strong delusion. There's a point where the delusion becomes so strong that one must simply opt out of it to avoid being corrupted by it, injured by it, or even killed by it. And I had a thought in mind earlier, and this is kind of macabre and dark, but just walk with me for a second on this. What would be worse for a person, to die at the age of 6 or by the age of 18 to be permanently inoculated from a relationship with your Creator and to be condemned eternally to damnation and hellfire? What would be worse? Okay, I know, kind of dark, and I can't help it. I think like that sometimes. I apologize if that offends some people. Let's move on to reason 663. Is it 63? Where was it? Yeah. Reason 663 to keep your kids out of the government schools. Let's go to Philadelphia. Over the Christmas break this year, in a number of Philadelphia high schools, dispensers are to be installed. The dispensers will be full of free condoms, and these condoms will be available to any of the students in any one of these 22 high schools in the Philadelphia metropolitan area. The condoms will be available for free so long as the students' parents did not sign a form opting them out of the program. Okay? In an email to nurses, school nurses, Philadelphia school district officials said that these giant plastic condom dispensers will be installed just outside the doorway near the entrance of the nurse's office, and that the nurses are not to be responsible for managing access or distribution. Basically, there's a drum full of condoms, and the high school students can come, and they don't even have to interact with the school nurse because, you know, the school nurses are working hard enough as it is, I'm sure, that the kids can just grab their prophylactics and go on about their affairs. Well, what about the opt-out, you say? I thought, you know, parents have opted out. Well, here's what the assistant superintendent says. He says, quote, opt-out letters, these are letters signed by parents saying, I want my son or daughter to opt out of this free condom program. Opt-out letters are to be maintained by the school office, and students are expected to honor the wishes of their parents. Don't laugh. If and the school says, well, parents might say, well, what if they decide not to, you know, which has been known to happen with teenagers in high school. Well, school officials say, don't worry about that. If a student disrespects their parent or guardian's directive, the opt-out, well, that's an issue for the home. That needs to be taken care of at home. I know, it's just, that's reason 663 to keep your children out of the government schools, ladies and gentlemen. So obviously you can see that here at the world, here at the Weekly Worldview, as well as here at the McBurney compound, you can call us secessionists. Yes, we didn't send our opt-out letter to the school. Although, as far as I know, this isn't happening in the Arapahoe County school system here in Colorado at the moment. But here at the McBurney compound, we never did send an opt-out letter to the school. We just seceded. That's right. We just opted out. Update on my 11-year-old daughter. She can now play a 12-bar blues just as good as her dad. So my extremely attractive audio engineer, as she sits upstairs in the home offices here at the compound, she often hears my daughter wailing away on her Japanese Gibson SG copy. Sounds pretty good. And I'll come upstairs and my wife will say, I thought that was you. Proving that while young Nicole may have some raw talent, she obviously needs a lot more practice. We'll keep working on that. All right. Yep, we do music class here at the compound as well. It's quite unstructured, unofficial. It's extracurricular was the term I was looking for. But she's got the 12-bar blues down, and she asked me today, she said, Daddy, is there anything else to a 12-bar blues? I said, no. I said, that's pretty much it. You just keep playing that over and over, and you change the words. What do you get at the end? An AC/DC album. Although we've been careful not to expose the young girl to Angus and the boys, at least not in her in her innocent state. She doesn't need any of that. All right, now, reason 664. So you see what happens, dear, when you make me leave out all these stories about the deviants and the perverts and the weirdos, I end up, well, with like 25 stories on the government schools. Reason 664, to keep your children out of the government schools. This is from the Telegraph in London. The growing popularity of yoga is forcing U.S. public schools to address the question of whether it is a religious practice or simply exercise. Well, I couldn't even imagine that that was an issue, frankly. And when I read this, I wrote, it was reason 664. Out in Encinitas, California, superintendent of schools there says, quote, this is 21st century PE. Do you know what PE is, my dear? Physical education, that's right. He says yoga is 21st century PE. He says it's physical, it's strength building, it increases flexibility, but it also deals with stress reduction and focusing, which kickball doesn't do. What's he got a problem with kickball for? You know, what has kickball ever done to destroy the mind of a government school kid? Kickball is probably one of the most innocuous things that happen. Oh, it's violent. They do kick that ball. And then also it focuses attention on kids who might not be able to catch and or kick the ball. And that can be bad for the self-esteem. I take it back. I'm anti-kickball now, too. All right. So he says kickball is not as good as yoga. One of the parents there in Encinitas, California, lovely seaside community, by the way. One of the parents has pulled her child out of yoga classes. She says the pupils were learning to worship the sun. And she says that's inappropriate in our public schools. And I'm thinking, have you hung around your public schools for more than 5 minutes? How could you possibly think that teaching your children to worship anything but Jesus Christ is inappropriate at your public schools, for crying out loud? Well, it's nice to know that there's at least one parent in Encinitas, California, who thinks sun worship is inappropriate. That's somewhat encouraging. But school officials say there is no chanting and there's no prayer positions or any of the cultural references that are commonly associated with the religious form of yoga. And Encinitas schools apparently are going to continue with their yoga program next school year, or this coming school year in the spring, I should say. The new program will see a 30-minute yoga lesson taught to 5,000 students starting from kindergarten twice a week. And then researchers out at University of San Diego are going to study the results. So there you go. Hand your kids over to the government schools. They're a science project, for crying out loud, with yoga. So reason 664 to keep your kids out of the public schools. And as of right now, I am not willing to say that kickball qualifies as reason number 665. I'm not sure where I stand on kickball. I think I'll have to do a study to find out where that fits in to my worldview. But I know I'm not a big fan of yoga because I tried it and it hurt. I did. I tried yoga when I was in high school. My odd uncle, Bernie, was into yoga. And he told me, do this and this and this. And I said, you're crazy, man. That hurts. So that was it. That's my whole experience with yoga. All right. So let's move on now to the politics file. From the Washington Times, I mentioned earlier that Angela Merkel chose not to address the issue of, what was that issue? I can't even remember anymore. The family minister, oh yes, referring to God as masculine, feminine, or neuter. Angela Merkel chose not to, she just chose to work from home on that issue. And that brings us to Hillary Clinton. which one should I start with? I'm going to start with John Bolton. He's like my favorite guy with a mustache and a bow tie, right? He's an odd-looking character, but, I mean, the guy says a lot of things that make a lot of sense. And why do I say that this week? Well, because he agreed with me. The State Department slammed former un-envoy John Bolton over his suggestion that Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton is falsely claiming to have a concussion to avoid a potentially embarrassing appearance before Congress to explain the deadly terrorist attack on the U.S. mission in Benghazi, Libya. John Bolton said last week that Clinton's claim that she had fainted because of the flu, hitting her head and suffering a concussion, was what Foreign Service officers call, quote, a diplomatic illness, unquote. Bolton says this diplomatic illness is intended to free a diplomat from an unpleasant duty, which many consider Hillary Clinton's potential testimony before Congress to be. That would be quite unpleasant, particularly for Mrs. Clinton, but no doubt for anyone who has to sit through it and look at her the whole time and listen to her the whole time. She always talks like she's speaking to a room full of second graders. Very careful to enunciate every word and syllable so that everyone understands exactly what she says. And she's careful not to speak more than three words at a time. Who could sit through that? Anyway, Victoria Nuland, who's a State Department spokeswoman, insisted to reporters last week that suggestions that Clinton faked her illness are, quote, completely untrue. And here's a note to all of you out there, observers of human behavior. When you hear the word untrue predicated by any other word, that other word negates the word untrue, okay? So when you hear completely untrue, it's absolutely untrue. It's completely, totally, absolutely untrue. Oh, then you know that it's true. So she says the fact that Clinton faked her illness is completely untrue. She says it's unfortunate that at times like this, people make wild speculation based on no information. I would just say to Ms. Nuland that, in fact, it was the lack of information regarding Ms. Clinton's injury that left many of us nonplussed at her allegation that, well, let's get to the board review, and then we'll come back. We'll circle back on Ms. Clinton and make sure that she is completely addressed. But you may have heard this week, this is a story from the Washington Times, that there has been an internal inquiry at the State Department, of the State Department, run by the State Department, produced for the State Department, an inquiry to figure out exactly what the problem was within the State Department. And that inquiry, certain facts were released last week, and the State Department inquiry into the deadly September 11th attacks on Benghazi slams bureaucrats for grossly inadequate security, but says that poor leadership could not be punished. The Washington Times reports that the State Department internal inquiry blames, quote, systematic failures and leadership and management deficiencies at senior levels, unquote. The Washington Times goes on, officials turned down repeated requests from diplomats on the ground for more security, both at the embassy in Tripoli and out in Benghazi. The report was produced by a panel. Now, another note to any of my friends out there who are observers of human behavior. Any report that is produced by a panel generally cannot be trusted because generally nobody's responsible for it. What is a panel? To me, that's something that you put on a wall in order to cover up the trim around a door jamb. You use a panel. But here we have a panel that was, let's see, it was led by a career diplomat, Thomas Pickering, and it's known as an accountability review board. See, now the board would be something that I would use to make the trim on the door jamb and cover the edges with a panel. But now they're reviewing diplomatic deficiencies at the highest level of government. This accountability review board, according to the Washington Times, also criticized the State Department for relying too much on unreliable local militias and for being lulled by the absence of specific warnings of an imminent attack rather than responding to the general security environment, blah, 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 okay? Now, so here's what's interesting about the report. It says that there were failures of leadership and deficiencies at senior levels, yet it never names a single person or recommends that anyone not just be fired or possibly indicted, but that no one even be reprimanded or have a, a, a frowny face inserted into their permanent file? Nobody. Well, that's what happens when you have boards and panels that get together and they issue these reports that are fairly nebulous, and nobody's really responsible for everything, but the situation was unacceptable. But there's no specific person that we would hold to account. And then we had four flunkies at the State Department resign this week. And I hope there's someone in the media out there, perhaps our good friend, I think he's in the media now, the guy with the mustache, John Bolton. I hope John Bolton, if someone could get a message to him, keep track of the four flunkies who resigned from the State Department this week. My bet is that they have some cushy patronage government job sometime shortly after New Year's with equal to better pay. That's my guess. But back to the Washington Times article before we get too far afield. In a letter to congressional committees last Tuesday, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton said she accepted every one of the board's 29 recommendations. You know, she came out of her daze, you know, from the concussion just long enough to say, oh, 29 points. I will implement all of those. And then she went back to sleep. She also said from her hospital bed, perhaps maybe her deathbed. I mean, I'm kind of worried about her. She also said that the State and Defense Departments were working to dispatch hundreds of additional Marine security guards to bolster our posts, and that her department had already begun to fix the problems that the board had identified, and then she had some dry heaves. It was really not pleasant, you know. So now, she contends that her office there at the State Department, they were already beginning to fix the problems when she unfortunately slipped and fell and she was injured in the head, apparently by a stomach virus that may or may not have been dehydrated. Billy, put that guitar away. Those boys always just want to play. All right, on to some serious news, something that we can take seriously, unlike Ms. Clinton's dehydrated episode of concussive stomach viruses, whatever she's got going over there. It's from the Washington Times. North Korea now has an intercontinental ballistic missile. Are you people aware of that? Yeah. While the State Department and highest-ranking members at the Department of Defense were busy having cocktail parties, North Korea has acquired an intercontinental ballistic missile. You remember they put a satellite up in space. And I know, it didn't work out perfectly, but trust me, ladies and gentlemen, it's a very big story. The missile may be capable of delivering a nuclear weapon to the United States, as demonstrated by their successful launch of a satellite back on December 12th. Two recent North Korean nuclear tests look suspiciously, according to Peter Vincent Pry, author of this article. The two most recent nuclear tests look suspiciously like super EMP weapons. Yeah. South Korean military intelligence has concluded that Russian scientists are in North Korea helping develop a super EMP warhead, that's an electromagnetic pulse warhead. Why should we worry about that? Well, it's because it doesn't really require the accuracy of the delivery systems that, say, have been developed here in the United States, Israel, Soviet Union. Oh, did I say Israel? course, Israel, as far as we know, they don't have any nuclear weapons, and that's cool with me. We'll just leave it at that. But in the past, the sane governments of the West, whether the Russians or the Americans or the British or the French, we've wanted to target our nuclear bombs so that we could hit specific areas. But an electromagnetic pulse weapon does not require that kind of accuracy. And just the fact that North Korea may be able to deliver a missile over the continent of the United States means that they could deliver one of these nuclear devices designed not to blow up a city, but to, a super EMP warhead would have a low yield, like the North Korean device that they've already tested, because it's not designated to create a big explosion, but to convert its energy into gamma rays that generate the electromagnetic pulse effect that melts down all the computers and all the electronics, if that's to be believed. And I think it's true that this electromagnetic pulse is a significant threat. I'm obviously no expert on it, but there are some experts I've read on it. And, it's pretty scary, frankly, to think about it. Getting knocked back into the Stone Age by a government that's living in the Stone Age. Mr. Pry in the Washington Times goes on, so as of December 12th, North Korea's successful orbit of a satellite demonstrates its ability to make an EMP attack against the United States right now. Yeah. He says, thus, North Korea now has an assured destruction capability against the United States. The consequences of this development are so extremely grave that the U.S. and global security have, in effect, gone over the strategic cliff into a free fall. Where we will land, Mr. Pry says, into what kind of future is as yet unknown. If North Korea and Iran both acquire the capability to threaten America with electromagnetic pulse genocide, this will destroy the foundations of the existing world order, which has, since 1945, halted the cycle of world wars and sustained the global advancement of freedom. Most alarming, he says, we are fast moving to a place where, for the first time in history, failed little states like North Korea and Iran that cannot even feed their own people will have the power in their hands to blackmail or destroy the largest and most successful societies on Earth. He reminds us that North Korea and Iran perceive themselves to be at war with the United States, and he reminds us also that those governments are desperate, highly unpredictable characters. And when the mob is at the gates of their dictators, will those dictators want to take America with them down into the darkness? Wow. So that's pretty scary. And that's an existential threat that we can all relate to, right? Being knocked back into Stone Age, losing all electronics, all communications, water, sewage, the ability to deliver food. It would be catastrophic. And I think one of his estimates are that if a successful EMP were launched against the United States, perhaps two-thirds of the population would starve to death within 2 years. Now, I'm not sure I agree with that. Because I think if we were knocked back into the Stone Age or, you know, back to 1830, I don't know. I mean, we survived back then. I think we would probably muddle through. And obviously, it would be catastrophic and horrible, but perhaps we would evolve. Yes. Thank you, my dear. Maybe Mr. Pry, who wrote the article, he may not believe in evolution. I don't know. Chances are we would not evolve. But I think that we would revert to our agrarian roots. And anyway, I don't think it would be quite as bad as people think, but it would be pretty bad in the cities. But speaking of going down into the darkness, we're almost out of time, so let me go to France. A government-commissioned report released last week has recommended that France allow doctors to, quote, accelerate death, unquote. I could just stop right there. Accelerate death is the term I used, and that this government report recommends in France that they accelerate death. Doctors should be able to accelerate death for terminally ill patients who want to end their lives. French people, according to this article from France24.com, I don't know what this, from some French news agency. French people overwhelmingly support medically assisted suicide. A recent poll said 89% of the French are in favor of just killing themselves. Well, they say medically assisted suicide. And French President François Hollande is also in support of killing himself. He pledged to act on the recommendations of the government commission report. The new report was produced by a senior medical professor there in France. He said he favored amending a 2005 law to broaden the circumstances in which doctors can help the terminally ill die. Helping someone to die. I think that used to be called murder, helping someone to die. He stresses that this doctor says he does not support any legislation that would suddenly and prematurely end life, and that he radically opposed inscribing euthanasia into law. So this guy's obviously a schizophrenic lunatic. He's making the recommendations to accelerate the death of the sick, yet he says he's radically opposed to euthanasia, and he doesn't want to suddenly and prematurely end life. I guess he prefers to starve people to death. He recommends that doctors should be given the authority to green light an acceleration of death under only three circumstances, he says. First, when the patients are able to make the request explicitly, or the instructions had been given in advance. Secondly, doctors could withdraw life support treatment or nourishment when requested by the patient's family. And third, when the patient is considered unconscious. So don't fall asleep in France, for crying out loud, if you're in a hospital. Lastly, doctors would be able to withdraw treatment when it's merely keeping a body alive in a, quote, vegetative state. Who decides what a vegetative state is? If it's these doctors who wrote this report recommending accelerating death, I don't think I trust them, frankly. That's right. These men and doctors and governing officials who've been given strong delusion, ladies and gentlemen, they will be the one to decide, not nature as created by God, and not rational men who understand that there's a creator to whom we are responsible for our brother's well-being. From the French press agency, Belgium is considering a significant change to its euthanasia law that would allow minors and Alzheimer's sufferers to seek permission to die. What's up with Europe? They all just want to kill themselves? They're so concerned with people seeking permission to die. It's almost as if Europe is about to collapse into another one of Europe's bloodlettings. It's almost as if that's happening. I hate to be dark and macabre and gloom and doom, but it's as if their mentality is to the point where, well, you know, we think we just might want to just kill ourselves. But you know what? Let's go kill the French instead. Let's go kill the Germans. Let's go kill our neighbors. It's just weird. The proposed changes to the euthanasia law in Belgium were submitted to Parliament last week by the Socialist Party. No surprise there. It calls for the law to be extended to minors if they are capable of discernment or affected by an incurable illness or suffering that we cannot alleviate. That's pretty broad, ladies and gentlemen. Are you going to trust bureaucrats to decide to allow to... Europe has raised their children as if there is no God, to believe that they simply evolved accidentally, and that if you're suffering, perhaps you consider relieving us of your suffering by just killing yourself, young man, please. It's disgusting. Parliamentarians in Belgium will also consider extending mercy killing to people suffering from Alzheimer's. So don't fall asleep in Belgium. Don't get confused and ask for directions in Belgium, right? Think you have Alzheimer's. Next thing you know, you're being helped to die. All right. I don't have time for the Ireland story. I am going to get to this, though. How much time do I have? Yeah, I don't have time. I'm going to get to the story, ladies and gentlemen, in Ireland regarding Savita Halappanavar. But I don't have time this week, and frankly, I would like to study it out a little bit more. I have an article here. I have a press release from Personhood USA that I haven't had a time to completely digest. So we'll get to the Ireland story next week. The bottom line is the death worshippers want to legalize abortion in Ireland, one of the few countries left on the planet where abortion is relatively rare and generally illegal. And so we will get to that in the coming weeks, because it does need to be addressed. And so I think we'll end this week with the drones, right? How about that? We end with the drones. The gossip website TMZ recently had an interest in obtaining a paparazzi drone, and that has prompted privacy concerns and public debate about the appropriate personal and commercial uses of unmanned aerial vehicles, better known to you and I as drones. And the Washington Times has a more troubling question. What if civilian drones are equipped to shoot more than just pictures? Though the Federal Aviation Administration regulations do not explicitly mention the use of firearms on drones, they do prohibit any type of recreational flying or dropping objects from an aircraft that endanger life or property. Well, doityourselfdrones.com, DIYdrones.com, is a drone hobbyist website. And, well, they have all kinds of cool stuff on there about drones, but they discourage usage or modifying drones for any uses that are potentially illegal or intended to be to do harm. Well, Chris Anderson, the site's founder over at DIYdrones.com, he says, "We've banned the weaponized use of drones." So how can a founder of a website ban the weaponization of drones? I guess in his own mind, he's banned it, so he's not going to do it. But the American Civil Liberties Union, they say America cannot allow our skies to be filled with flying robots armed with all manner of dangerous weapons. Note to the American Civil Liberties Union, yes, we can, and I believe we will. Yeah, I believe, well, last month, according to this article from the Washington Times, a 27-year-old man was sentenced to 17 years in prison for plotting to attack the Pentagon and the Capitol with a remote-controlled model aircraft rigged with explosives. Wow. Anyway, so not to be too gloom and doom, ladies and gentlemen, but not unlike nuclear proliferation, the proliferation of drones in a society that has been detached from God and has brought upon itself strong delusion, well, that's just scary what could happen with the drones, okay? And I'm generally not like a conspiracy guy who worries about black helicopters and stuff. What I worry about is, young men who know an awful lot about computers, who are filled with hatred and vengeance, who have no understanding of their responsibility to the Creator, getting a hold of drones and bombs and things like that. And, well, I guess I'm going to end on a note that's not that encouraging, but I will be back with you next week, should the Lord tarry. Until then, I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, Denver Bible Church, American Right to Life, Personhood USA, and, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Lord willing, I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.